Have you ever seen the movie 300? Then you know what I'm talking about when I talk about Spartan warriors. But did you know that one of the Spartan warriors was disgraced by the rest of Sparta for not being able to die in battle? I want to talk a little bit about how we can overcome things in our past, ways to do it gracefully and with honor in other ways, and how that can affect us in society.
Welcome to the Warrior Mindset Podcast. We are your guide as you make your way through life, getting better 1% every day. We believe that life is lived and true victory won through adversity. Nothing easy is ever worth it. We believe in the warrior ethos and support those that choose to walk that path.
All right, let's talk about Aristodemus. He's not a well-known Spartan warrior from that battle at Thermopylae with the Spartans standing up to the Persians with their famous 300. Frank Miller's movie about that was pretty awesome. We know the name Leonidas, if you're into that stuff, the king, and how he stood there. And I've written about him myself, but there's another character, Aristodemus, who's pretty interesting in his the story that goes with him. If you remember, in the movie, he was slightly differently, and we'll get into that. So Aristodemus was one of the few Spartan survivors of the Battle of Thermopylae. He faced disgrace for not dying in battle alongside his comrades like everyone else. Because if we remember the movie and the story, they all die, including the king. Also known as Dilios in the movie. And the graphic novel, although I don't think there was a lot of text in the graphic novel, but in the movie, it was called Dilios. In the movie 300, he had lost his eye. And then at the end, he rallied the Spartan army heroically in the front. There's a scene of him running at the camera. But in reality, he was shunned for surviving due to an infection. So the movie's partially right, but really not extremely historically accurate, although in that movie they couldn't exactly get into the fact that he was he had eye infection. So he was excused from battle due to illness and infection, and it was not just him by himself. So according to this, I was doing some research here, Livius.org, it's got a lot of history on ancient Greek and Spartan battles and things like that. There's a section here that gets into this detail. And two of the 300, it is said, namely Aristus, I can't pronounce that, and Aristodemus. They were dismissed from battle by the king because they both had eye issues, some kind of infection or whatever, and they were really suffering. So they were sent back. I have another article here. So the first, there was actually three. So the first was this one guy who had been sent by Leonidas as an emissary to Thessaly to try to talk them out of or whatever of using their navy or something to support the Persians, whatever. He was sent there as some kind of envoy, and he failed to get back to the battle in time. And because of that, he was branded in shame. And ultimately, he hung himself because he was so shameful. And then there were two others, Aristodemus and Aretas, both had this eye issues or whatever. And the king deemed them unfit and ordered them to return home. But the one of them, Aretas, he turned back to the battlefield. And though he was literally blind, he fought to the very end and died in battle, whereas Aristodemus went on back home and then was therefore regarded as a coward and was subjected to humiliation and was even called Aristodemus the coward by the other Spartans. You can read some of that in like Wikipedia and stuff, backing that up. However, this disgrace fueled him and kind of gave him a thirst for vengeance. So in the Battle of Plataea, which is, you know, they're forever warring back then. later on, he sort of unleashed this berserker charge and fought suicidally. He ultimately died in battle. And, you know, posthumously won back his honor. So his depiction in popular culture spans lots of different things, you know, novels, graphic novels, films, each one sort of unique and looks into it. In one, The Coward of Thermopylae, Caroline Snedeker, I believe, he's portrayed as a person marked by shame and then redemption. The title itself underscores this, Coward of Thermopylae, emphasizing that cowardice little much. But through the story, it's more of a story of personal struggle, right? And then eventual redemption, highlighting that power that we find through color, courage and valor, which is something that I think we all seek out in our lives. Stephen Pressfield has a book, Gates of Fire. It's a wonderful book. He comes back as a recurring character. He is a part of the forces at Thermopylae. And, you know, follows the story and stuff. His perceived cowardice and then moments of bravery later in the battlefield. This is used to sort of explain honor and duty and how it can overcome your current situations. Frank Miller's graphic novel, which the movie 300 is named after, in the movie 300, through this character Delios, he embodies the spirit of resilience and perseverance, and in that story he loses his eye in combat, and so they're using him more in that sense, overcoming that injury to continue fighting, to go home and rally everyone and bring them back. Okay. Across all these different looks at his story, it's, you know, sort of up for reinterpretation a little bit, shaping these perceptions we have on legacy and character that we find within ourselves. If we look at the history itself, you know, and the way Sparta looked at and citizens of Sparta looked at him, it was more disgraceful, right? He didn't live up to that Spartan expectation of heroism and, you know, sacrifice, ultimate sacrifice. This is a testament of the complexities of where we find honor and courage in the human experience, right? This concept of honor is a central part of this, you know, story. It's a quick story that I've told you here. You know, that Spartan society is deeply intertwined with notions of courage, self-sacrifice, loyalty to your comrades. I mean, this whole concept of like they use the shield and their shield protects the person next to them, and then that person's shield protects them, and so on and so forth down the line. So with him returning to battle and just sacrificing himself, you know, demonstrates historically, him reclaiming his honor through that sacrifice. We can look at this in terms of our struggle as men, as contributors to our society or our community, our brotherhood, our team, whatever it is, the complexities of navigating things like morality, identity, our purpose. I think I'm trying to use him as a metaphor to help dig into this idea of where we can find ourselves and how we can portray ourselves to the world in a true light of what we want through these principles that are generally considered good. The idea that we can all individually overcome almost any obstacle, whether it's social or personal or whatever it is, this inherent capacity that we have to grow and change, I think is, this story is a pretty good embodiment of it. And I think it's one that, and I'm going to say men, I think it's one that men struggle with. There's also looking at this, thinking about men in general and where they struggle to find their place within all of these principles in life. There's a societal pressure to be these things, I think, from early on in life, that we feel, particularly men feel. So the story of Astrodemus is a great example of the power that society has over us. I mean, him being shunned by his community. I mean, for the other character, for that first guy, was worse than that. He hung himself. The other guy turned back and died in battle, to the point where Astrodemus overcame the eye issues and everything, and he went back into battle and, basically fought himself to death. I mean, in the end, he preferred to die in battle than to suffer a bad reputation. And I think that's something that we carry with us and that we all struggle with a little bit and want to work on. I found this really interesting question in Quora. Why does Astrodemus not have his own movie? He was deemed a coward for being the sole survival of the Battle of Thermopylae, yet the following year he fought valiantly in one of the most decisive battles in history. That's a truly epic tale of redemption. And just so you know as well, it's not about dying, but I mean, if we look at this one person's, apparently a disabled veteran, this guy responding, he's apparently a historian too. He's really into this stuff, but he says Astrodemus at the Battle of Plataea fought suicidal, basically killed himself when he didn't need to do that to win that battle. Spartan warriors are expected to fight to the death if needed, but even then they wanted their warriors to survive battle as much as possible. The Spartans did remove the black mark on his name because of his actions at Thermopylae, but didn't give him any honors for his actions at Plataea. Spartan warriors are not to commit suicide in battle if it isn't needed. His actions at Plataea ultimately seemed cowardly as well. It's like when we look at that samurai concept of seppuku, where they commit ritual suicide by, when they're dishonored or whatever, to have honor back, they basically cut open their stomach or whatever. You know, ultimately, when we look at that you would rather die than experience that hit to your reputation or whatever, it seems extreme. And it kind of is. I mean, things were a lot more extreme back then than they are now, obviously, kind of. But that's a concept worth delving into, because even in more subtle ways, we experience this. Especially, like I'm saying, we experience this as men in the world trying to find our place in the hierarchy of all the other humans. I mean, I've struggled with it, and I coach a lot of people that struggle with it. There was no need for Astrodemus' suicide to win that battle. Brings up another thing that I've been questioned about. I don't know that I have a good answer, which is why I'm sort of doing this podcast. And Astrodemus caught my eye in terms of where he fit in the hierarchy of the Spartan society, and even where he fits in stories about modern society, specifically when we're talking about men and where they fit. This article here someone sent me to ask me what I thought about. It's from USA Today of all places, but men are going to brutal boot camps to reclaim their masculinity. How do we get here? Already, I think they're kind of missing the point with the article, but I want to go through this. And they're describing a, this right here, this Instagram post where these guys are climbing up this hill. They crawl slowly up a hill on their stomachs covered in grime. One man moans after an instructor yanks him back by the ankles back down the hill. Still, he keeps crawling. These men aren't prepping for an elite military mission. They're trying to become better men, they say. Man camps, all male experiences designed for men's self-improvement, have gained attention on social media, where more extreme versions of these programs, such as Modern Day Night Project, blah, 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 blah. There's a bunch of them. Though men's psychology experts are skeptical of the extreme iterations of man camps, they say the growing awareness of them points to a loneliness and need for community men face in modern society. Men are seeking out difficult experiences. It's not just men. I think this article is just picking on men, but it's not just men that are seeking these things out. I know plenty of women who are seeking out difficult situations, difficult experiences to overcome as well. They're seeking out groups. They're seeking out tribes. They're seeking out some sort of social bonding and sense of social capital. And they're turning to these groups that, to me, feel like they're giving people a bit of a false sense of that. This guy, Eric Anderson, there's really no more about this. This is what I find the most interesting. There's really not much more about that goes into that. And they're just kind of selling, you know, more of these things. And they don't really have a good answer. I would say that the videos aren't hiding anything. I mean, they're showing some of the toughest parts. I wonder if I can show some of the... They're showing some of the toughest parts. I don't think that it is much about... men seeking out tribes, social bonding, since it's social capital. It might be, but I also think it's also about men and people, but men struggling with where they fit in this hierarchy of being principled, because I've experienced that. Here's another one here, and we'll get into this 7 leadership lessons from a nasty mud pit. They're looking to be better leaders, better parents, better friends, and they're doing it through these shared hard experiences. Because, and I even see some of the comments from some of the military people or other people are like, you're not even in the military, or hey, you know, the military is free. I do think it's silly that they're paying, you know, upwards of $10,000 or whatever to do some of these things. That's quite expensive. Yet I don't know that it is, because when you think about the people running them and them needing to make a living, and these people obviously want to do these sorts of things, maybe it all works out. I wouldn't pay that much. But then again, I'm, you know, I've done mine, but I think it's just like Astrodemus. Modern men don't know where they fit in this hierarchy of living a principled life. And by that, I mean, you know, even if we take the military apart, it is still not cut and dry as it used to be. You know, when you look at like the greatest generation, World War II, that was pretty cut and dry. Even in my opinion, you know, I'm using air quotes, fighting communism, whatever, through some of these other actions that our country's taken, it's still, you know, an enemy, right? And even in, you know, 9/11, where, you know, however that played out, we still felt like we had that enemy in our sights. We felt like once, whether you believe it or not, whether it was like the right enemy was identified, you know, went after that. But, you know, even that now is confusing because it's like, where do we fit? Where do we fit in that hierarchy of living those values? Because, you know, the values and principles are all great until you are in a position where you have to actually live up to them, right? You can do anything on your own without any sort of like pressure to actually live that way. And it's easy to say that. It's in those moments where you actually have to make those decisions or actually practice those principles and values in real life with other people with real consequences. Do you find out who you are? And these sorts of things are ways to get you there, are ways to do that, as torturous and painful and tiring and muddy and dirty and sweaty and scary as they look to some people. You still, you know, won't necessarily die, right? You're not going to die. You're going to be very uncomfortable. It's like a marathon, you know. A lot of people run marathons. It's very similar. I mean, how are you, you know, and a lot of people make fun of people that run marathons. They say the shit's crazy. Same thing as this, in my humble opinion. Early on, I found a gentleman named Mark Divine. I've talked about him a lot on this show in his program Seal Fit. And they run he runs a crucible at Seal Fit that is I think they have a bunch. You know, one's like a 8-hour, 12-hour, 24-hour, 72-hour, different crucibles where these people basically do things like Navy SEALs do. You know, they make them do these tough workouts, crawl in the mud, get messy, all this stuff, because they want to learn these lessons and they want to find out what they're made of and they want to discover if they can practice these things in these situations, right? Because when you're in this extremely tired, uncomfortable, scared, being pushed, doesn't matter what level of shape you're in, you've got to know what you believe in and you've got to know what you're going to do, like how far are you willing to go. I mean, a lot of people quit. And that's, you know, they haven't discovered that yet, or they're not into the path of discovering that. And I know this can all sound kind of crazy, but this is one of the reasons why people do these things. I think Seal Fit's probably one of the higher end versions, maybe one of the more well-known ones. And the history is that Mark Divine initially created this program to help people with some pre-training before they go actually sign up for the Navy to become Navy SEAL. So sort of like the preconditioning mental and physical aspect of training to get you ready for, you know, the SEAL actually becoming a SEAL. And what he found was that civilians were wanting to do this because they want some of the same things. And I will tell you, not everyone can go become a Navy SEAL. It's just not possible for everyone to do that. When I discovered a lot of this stuff in my life, it was too late. I was in my 30s. That window of opportunity had passed me by. So I participated in some of these things. I never did SEAL Fit myself, but I participated in some of these things. Some things like this. And I think it's important for a lot of people. And some of them are over the top, but that's up for you to decide if what level you need. I don't think it's up to us to make fun of these people. I think that's kind of silly. It's just not, you know, not it. I do want to just put in a little humor here. Because of this sort of stuff, you see a lot of this stuff on like Instagram memes and things like that. I love this one where we're talking about this routines, you know, the daily morning routine and all this stuff. And this one's pretty good. 4 a.m. waken, 4:30 bowl of ice cubes and milk for breakfast. 5:15, intensely stare at a photo of Tom Hardy. 9 a.m., put out the fire. 9:30 a.m., saltwater bath, heal the burns. 11 a.m., 6 bags of shredded cheese. 12 p.m., hit the gym. Neck day. 5 p.m., disobey laws of traffic. 10 p.m., bedtime story. 11 p.m., ponder past mistakes. 4 a.m., repeat. It's pretty funny. And it kind of goes in line with a lot of the, you know, a lot of the humor that we find in this. Now, I've done an episode on something called Shugyo. And I think, Mark Divine even talks about that. The practice of Shugyo. And what this is, is this concept of putting yourself in a difficult situation to train your capacity to handle other difficult situations, right? And we do this a lot in our martial arts practice where we'll, you know, a typical class is about an hour. It's difficult, but it's not like, you know, super high end difficult, and you can make it through. It's, you know, you're not constantly moving under extreme stress the whole time. Now we do these shugyo where we try to do that. We try to push the pace and get into this stuff. And he talks about, do you have your shugyo practice? If you've done something like the workout Murph, then you know shugyo. And the thing is, Murph seems extreme to a lot of people, but what it's about is it's about expanding your capacity to handle tough workouts, right? They do this in like a military special operations and special forces stuff to help expand their capacity. But it's not just physical, it's also mental. I've done some things like the waterfall training where you get under the freezing waterfall. There's Yamabushi, which are some, I think they're like Japanese monks. They do this work under these freezing waterfalls to sort of push this idea that they can experience hard things and do mundane everyday things under hard, difficult conditions. And I find it extremely rewarding. So the question there is, what about it? What do you think of Aristodemus in his shame to redemption with his sacrifice? It's extreme, but have you done something like that in your life? Have you been through this path of failure or shame? Maybe you've done something really bad or whatever, or experienced a loss of some kind. And by that, I mean like, you know, a loss of investment or a business went out of business. Maybe you got divorced, whatever, I don't know. But then you change yourself in a positive way and sort of have like a redemption, like a happier life, or to come back and win. I think it's also one of the reasons why we love the, you know, that underdog story. But redemption, it's a powerful motivator, something worth studying. I think Aristodemus is a good case study for exploring the subject matter. And I hope I've sort of piqued your interest and given you something to dig into. And, you know, let me know what you think. Is it ridiculously silly? Do you think these, you know, man camps, these boot camps or whatever are silly? What do you think? Would you do one? Have you done one? If so, what was your experience? Let me know. Love to talk to you about it. All right. Until next time, get after it.